Beyond the Dark on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Let's say hello to David Storm over in Australia. It's good evening here and good morning there. Good morning.
Good morning, Grace.
David, you've written a book called The Atheist Afterlife. Now, this means that you believe in afterlife, but as an atheist.
Yes, that's right. I'm an atheist. I believe there probably is no God, and I believe it on the basis of evidence, and none of the reasoning for the affirmative case really strikes a chord with me. So I take that position. But for all my life, I've felt that consciousness survives death. And over the past 10 years, I've tried to, as a philosopher, tried to analyse that very, very clearly as to why. I mean, it's a very strange kind of contradiction there, because most people who hold the view that there is an atheist, that there is an afterlife, do so for because they follow a major religion. And so I've tried to figure out, well, what is that? Is it wishful thinking? Is it a delusion? Or is it an intuition based on something quite real? And so I've analysed it, and while I'm an atheist, I do believe that the better position in regard to whether consciousness survives death or not is actually to be agnostic. I don't know if there's an afterlife, but I do know that it is possible to reason, to get there through a reasonable course of logic. And it's what I think is the only real support, the only real support for a belief in an afterlife.
I think it's amazing, David, let me stop you there, because I don't think I've ever met an atheist in all my years that believes there's an afterlife. Are there other atheists that believe this as well?
Oh, well, there might be. Look, I haven't met many. You know, I'm a rare breed. I probably, not loved by either side, because on the one side, the atheist mightn't like me because I'm advocating a position which is quite different to the normal materialist position that an atheist generally takes. And on the other hand, I'm saying that, but if there is an afterlife, there is no God attached to it, because it just simply doesn't make sense. So I'm probably loathed by both sides, actually.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because if it doesn't make sense that there isn't a God, there'll be people out there thinking that it doesn't make sense that you're an atheist, thinking there's an afterlife. Who would have created this afterlife?
Well, just like the physical world doesn't need to be created, there is a logical explanation for its existence. The same thing would apply. I mean, it doesn't particularly change when you're looking at something like that. I mean, if there is an afterlife, then the same laws of physics would apply, the same sort of logic would apply, and it is possible to reason through the issues and separate them, Pete. It's possible to separate them. I mean, on the one hand, I think people who believe in an afterlife for religious reasons just kind of do so on the basis of faith. They don't put much effort into thinking, well, where is it and what is it, and really is there any evidence or logic behind it, or what reason can I give that there's an afterlife other than, well, my priest or the Bible says so, which is not quite, we have to hold ourselves to higher standards than that. On the other hand, I think atheists should be open-minded about the question and not simply close it off and say, no, I don't believe in an afterlife, it's a religious fiction.
Sorry, David, I was going to tell you, what's jumped into my mind is, you say the odds of meeting God is nil. I have this vision of you getting the shock of your life when God comes up and says, you're wrong.
Well, it would be the shock of my life. It was the shock of my death, actually, Pete.
Yes. What made you write the book?
Well, for that reason, that I really think that it's that atheists should be more open-minded about that question. And I really wanted to answer the question, can someone with a really sound mind, someone who is logical, reasonable, does not think faith is a virtue, requires more intellectually than faith, has to have some sort of solid grounding for their beliefs. Is it possible for such a person to legitimately put their hand up and credibly say, I think there's an afterlife? And there is. It's possible to reason through the issue. And as I said, I don't know if there is an afterlife. But what can be reasoned through quite clearly is if there is, what it is. And there is a pivotal question about it, which is there is a pivotal section of this argument. Basically, it comes down to... Shall I explain briefly the argument?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. Well, look, for there to be an afterlife, two things have to exist. The first, there has to be additional dimensions of time and space. And the second, there has to be duality, mind-brain duality. The first one, additional dimensions of time and space, is basically because in the day-to-day normal waking world, we exist in three dimensions of space and one of time, and we simply do not see dead people. They are not among us. We don't have the experience of them. And it is logical from that to say that if an afterlife exists, it really must exist in an alternate dimension of space and time, because it's not in the one that we are conscious in now. That's the first part. So unless we can actually legitimately say there are additional dimensions of time and space, I think an afterlife is dead. The second is that additional dimensions of time and space is not enough to have an afterlife. I mean, you could prove that there are additional dimensions of time and space wrapped up in the quantum field, but that wouldn't give you an afterlife. The human constitution would have to be such that a transition of consciousness after death is possible. And the only way that can be correct, the only way that can happen, is for there to be duality. For our brain and our mind to be separate. Unless that is so, we simply can't have a transition of consciousness at the death of our body that would give us any kind of existence whatsoever. So that's duality in a philosophical sense, what Descartes was talking about in the 1700s. I don't agree with the reasons he gave that he put forward for duality. I have my own. But those are the two prerequisites for an afterlife. And unless you can credibly say those can be true, and they can be true together, they both have to be true, then an afterlife is simply wishful thinking. Now, what the book shows is that there is the pivotal point in this argument is that there is one statement which kind of makes it make sense or not, and that statement is there is reason to believe that we dream in additional dimensions of space and time to the dimensions of space and time in our waking existence. Now, if that is true, an afterlife is almost guaranteed. Now, there are reasons to believe that we actually do dream in additional dimensions of space and time. Because the weird things that happen in our dreams are exactly the weird things we would expect to happen if there was an additional dimension of space and time. Now, if that statement is true, if we do dream in additional dimensions of space and time, it actually fulfills our two criteria, because logically from that, we must have additional dimensions of space and time and our brain and mind must be separate. Now, it's probably beyond the scope of the interview to explain why those two things necessarily follow, but there you have, I think, the only way you can credibly put your hand up and say, look, an afterlife is more than possible, it's actually likely if this is true, and there are reasons to think this is true. So I think I can not have a great problem here with having two brains or something, one being an atheist brain and the other being a more flighty brain. I think reasonably I can hold those two views on the grounds of evidence and reason, A, that I think there probably is no God, but B, I think an afterlife is a possibility. And in fact, I put the odds at higher than that.
And what do you think the afterlife would be in your mind?
There is only one possibility. There's absolutely only one logical possibility. It has to be the dream state. It has to be the dream state. We only know two realities. Outer reality, the things we see, hear, smell, you know, the things we can touch. And the other reality we're aware of is an inner reality, how we think and feel. Now, basically, it seems quite logical that the dream state is an objectification of our thoughts and feelings. It is our thoughts and feelings projected into, you know, an exterior view or an outer reality. That's what the dream state appears to be. Now, that is the only place our consciousness could transition to at the point of death. I mean, Pete, there are two realities, inner reality and outer reality. There's no other realities that we are aware of. So at the point of death, where our consciousness is focused in outer reality, you know, we're seeing things, hearing things, we're in the world. If at that point we die and there are additional dimensions of time and space and our brain and mind are separate, there's only one place our consciousness can go, and that is inner reality, which means we transition to the dream state. But we can't kind of just toot a horn and say the afterlife is the dream state, because there are certain things that make them different. The first is, a dream is something we're having when we're asleep, and that definition should continue. Basically, the first distinction or difference, of course, is that in the afterlife we're not going to wake up in the morning. The second is, it would be real. We don't consider our dreams to be real. But if this scenario, if this theory is correct, then our dream state is objectifiable and real. And the third thing is, the afterlife would be the dream state as we experience it at the time, not as we remember it. Because, as you can appreciate, you know, dreams as we remember them, all their interrelationships gradually dissipate. They are not cohesive. Waking up, our dreams fall apart, basically. They don't kind of make sense, or they seem weird. So the afterlife would be the dream state as we experience it, not as we remember it. That's the only possibility.
I'm talking to a very interesting man called David Storm, who's got a book called The Atheist's Afterlife. What do you want people to take from this book?
The purpose of the book is to explore the subject without prejudice. So really it's for religious people who would say, look, obviously they're not going to agree with the atheist part, but at least then they can have something more than just say there's an afterlife because God says so, which is not enough. It's really not enough for, you know, intelligent humans to say that. You then have something, at least something on which to ground their belief in an afterlife. However, an afterlife based purely on physics that doesn't require anything supernatural ain't going to have you're not going to meet God there any more than you meet God here. I mean, there are people that think they meet God here, and they'll probably meet God in the afterlife. An afterlife that requires nothing more than physics and has no supernatural realm does not require a God. But on the other hand, I would like atheists to read it, so that they would say, well, look, I don't know if this is true or not, but at least I'm willing to keep my mind open about it. But Pete, the best thing about this is that this isn't a wacky theory which can't be proved, which almost everything in this sphere is. In other words, it can't be proved. This is a testable theory. And that's what's exciting about it, and that's why I can put up my hand and say I think it's a credible theory.
Why is it testable? Why is it testable?
Because if the dream state is real, not just a function of mind, or not just a epiphenomenon of mind, not just, you know, what it feels like, what a mind feels like from the inside. If the dream state is real, objectifiably real, and we transition there every night, then what logically follows from that is that the things that we see in our dreams must really exist. From that, we infer that there must be matter in the universe that is responsive to thought and feelings, that creates that world. Now, the world that we exist in our waking life is moved and shaped by physical forces, gravity, the laws of motion, you know, people pouring concrete and carpenters and cranes. And that's what shapes the physical world. In the dream world, there has to be matter that is shaped by thoughts and feelings. If it's a reality, that has to be true. So therefore, there has to be matter capable of being shaped by thoughts and feelings. The only possibility there is for that to be dark matter. Dark matter is the matter in the universe we know exists, but we do not know what it is. The prediction of this theory is that dark matter must be responsive to thought. If that turns out to be true, then an afterlife is, you know, the probability of an afterlife just skyrocketed. Not proven, but it would skyrocket. But the value of this theory is that it makes a specific prediction. Like it or not, you may be wild, but that's its specific prediction, that dark matter must be responsive to thoughts and feelings. If it turns out to be true, an afterlife is probable, or more than probable. If it turns out to be untrue, then the theory is dead in the water. Now, in my lifetime, with the Hadron Collider and advances in science and physics, I think that it's quite likely that we will actually have an answer to that in my lifetime, which is, you know. So we not only have a theory that has a logical consistency, it, like all good theories, it says, it predicts something which is testable. And that's, if you're going to believe in an afterlife, that I think is the only credible reason for doing so.
I've got to ask, do you believe in life on other planets?
I would say that's a completely separate question, but...
No, but I'm curious about the way you...
No, it's not a matter of belief. It's a statistical probability, I'd say it's likely.
I mentioned that because I wondered if this afterlife could be on another planet.
Well, could's an interesting word. It could be. You're assuming a lot there, but I don't think we need that. We don't need to jump there,
right,
to explain it.
Right.
So, that may be true. I couldn't argue with that. It's certainly in the realms of possibility. If there's an afterlife, well, but we don't need that.
Do you ever...
If there's an afterlife, it's the dream state, right here. We transition there every night. And there's many people who believe in... Oh, many Buddhists, there's many... theosophists, etc., he would say, well, yeah, sure, that's true.
Do you ever think that maybe as you get older and near to death, that you could one day maybe question and maybe turn to God?
Well, I'm always questioning, and I hope until my final breath, I never stop it. I hope, though, that I like the Richard Dawkins line, we should be open-minded, but not so open-minded that our brains fall out. It's a terrific line. It just means we should just hold back a little bit, you know, have some clarity of thought. I, you know, when I say I'm an atheist, you can't prove a negative. So I say there probably is no God. I don't need God as an explanation to explain the world. Now, that's on the basis of the evidence and the reason that I'm aware of. If there is evidence or reason that I'm not aware of or comes up, I'm very happy to change my mind.
David, how will I get the book?
Amazon.co.uk is probably the best way to get it. And unlike most books of philosophy, it's entertaining and humorous. Most books on philosophy make me want to stick pins in my eyes, and it's not one of those.
And the book is called?
The Atheist Afterlife, and the subtitle is The Odds of an Afterlife Reasonable, The Odds of Meeting God Then Nil.
David, you're a fascinating man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Pete. Appreciate it.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show, Late Night City, with Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.